Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, from London, where there's an elegiac mood this evening. It's an evening in London. Elegiac, first of all, for what's being called London's unforgettable summer of sport. In other words, the £11 billion that would be $16 billion, $17 billion American Olympic extravaganza, which we've talked about at some length on this broadcast. Much of the elegiac feeling is being spread by the media partners and other business associates of the organizing committee, I guess trying to convince themselves their investment was worth it. You have to read the fine print to even know that they're connected to the retrospective cheerleading. Associated with it was a nationalistic ad campaign that underlined the great in Great Britain, possibly because with Scotland maybe leaning towards some form of independence, you wouldn't want to underline the United in United Kingdom right about now. But a major part of that elegiac feeling is connected, this being Britain, with the weather. Today, the closing day of the, well, you know it's the closing day of the Paralympic Games. For goodness sake, you know that. You've been watching, is also the closing day, so the weatherman tells us, of the gorgeous summer weather that London has been enjoying since, well, pretty much since the Olympic opening ceremony, almost as if the good Lord himself were one of the worldwide Olympic partners. We are beginning to get some of the figures in, which are not so elegiac. Unemployment is down a little bit in this part of the world, because of temporary Olympic jobs, like,
it's over there.
That job will be going away soon. But retail sales were down, as we discussed earlier on this in this series of programs. Stores in central London were saying, please, anyone, come, but take. And there is a lot of wishful non-thinking about the legacy of the Games. An unspoken attempt to say, in the long light of hindsight, that the $11 billion will have been worth it. By the way, is anybody in SoCal able to say what the long-range influence of the 1984 Games was in L.A., aside from the design of the original design of the West Side Pavilion? I'll wait. And I will stop waiting. Now, they are almost asking Brits to believe that some successful athletic events attended by some cheerful volunteers, as well as joyous crowds, can somehow alleviate serious structural, economic, and social problems. It's possible, with the delicious sunshine and these balmy, breezy evenings, to think that such a thing might be true. But I recommend checking back with Britain in February, when the sky is a gloomy dark gray and the sun, or the rumor of the sun, sets at 4 p.m., Meanwhile, back in the States, political conventions are over. Maybe like really over. When even the mainstream newspapers publish articles that recognize these events as the vestigial relics they are. Something that's been obvious since the Cosby Show was on the air. Maybe we've seen the last of these elephantine infomercials. They would be if they had info. In terms of American democracy, and my feeling about that is roughly the same as what Gandhi said when asked what he thought about Western civilization, namely, I think it would be a good idea. In terms of American democracy, it is a good thing to let each of the candidates speak to a large multi-network audience for an hour. Matter of fact, it would be an even better idea to do what a lot of other Western democracies do and give each candidate several such hours leading up to the election. Maybe one in exchange for each of the hours of coverage the conventions used to get. So that would be five. Sounds kind of sensible. Until you remember, those hours in the run-up to the election would come in the fall, when the networks want you to be watching their fine new shows, not some dude in a suit promising you a pony. That, after all, is why NBC ponied up so much money for the Olympics, as a vehicle to show you all those promos for those fine new shows. So, maybe that, not tradition, not politics, not the desire of journalists to have their employers pay them to cavort with their colleagues for two gossip-filled weeks, maybe that's why 4 years from now, We'll see two more mega shows starring people with limited star power. But, you know, maybe since it's summertime, and it's spectacle, if we're very lucky, they'll stage the conventions on ice. Hello, welcome to the show. From just off Leicester Square in London, England, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. Since they make it a habit over there to put out sometimes erroneous information on what I'm pulling down, I thought it'd be nice to return the compliment. Rupert Murdoch received a $30 million compensation package just now, despite the British phone hacking scandal. There's accountability for you. He also slashed, his company, Nice Corp, also slashed the pay of three of its four other top executives. So the lesson there would be Rupert Murdoch next chance you get. Some members of the British Parliament questioned whether he was fit to head his sprawling media company in the aftermath of the phone scandal, which is continuing. But News Corp directors felt differently, bestowing Murdoch with a $30 million compensation package in the current fiscal year. That's a cut, ladies and gentlemen, of nearly 10%. Because they have a new business model from Murdoch's compensation last year, which was such a good year. That was the year the scandal broke. However, his 39-year-old son, James, doesn't look a day over 47, who stepped down from his role leading the company's publishing division in Britain. He received compensation of $16.8 million in this fiscal year. A year earlier, he returned his $6 million bonus and accepted only $11.9 million in compensation. So he got a raise if you don't count the bonus. But that's nice. That is nice. Company's number two executive, Chase Carey, notably not a Murdoch, got nearly $24.8 million, nearly 18% down. Their third highest paid executive, Fox News Channel's Roger Ailes, $21.1 million for doing that. That's an increase of 30%. So it's a new business model. Pay Roger more. That is nice. Nice people doing nice things. In a not related matter, news of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. The Israeli government's failure to respond adequately to Jewish extremist attacks against churches and monasteries is fostering a climate of intolerance towards Christianity in Israel, according to a senior Vatican official in Jerusalem. Can't we all get along? Police inaction and an educational culture that encourages Jewish children to treat Christians with, quote, contempt, unquote, has made life increasingly, quote, intolerable for many, according to Father Pier Battista Pizzaballa. Now, you're going to think, am I kidding about that name? Pizzaballa. Ladies and gentlemen, it's right here. Can't hit it any harder. He's the custodian of the Holy Land for... So... Why isn't he just telling his broom, you ask? I don't know. Father Pizzaballa's intervention, unusually outspoken for a senior Catholic churchman, according to the Telegraph newspaper, came after pro-settler extremists attacked a Trappist monastery in the town of Latrun. I know what you're thinking. Latrun. The door of the monastery was set fire to, and its walls were covered with anti-Christian... We're not joking about this. The walls were covered with anti-Christian graffiti that denounced the... Actually the namesake of the religion as a monkey. That's not nice. This incident is the latest in a series of acts of arson and vandalism this year targeting places of worship, including Jerusalem's 11th century monastery of the cross, built on the site where the tree used to make Christ's cross is said to have been planted. Slogans reading death to Christians and other offensive graffiti were daubed on its walls. Father Pizzaballa, I swear, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to hit it again. There it is, Father Pizzaballa, the head of the Franciscan order in the Holy Land, and fellow senior clergymen of other denominations have protested the failure of the police to identify the culprits behind any of the incidents. Maybe if they had a guy with a different name talking to the police, they'd get results. I don't know. The most important issue they say Israel has failed to address is the practice of some ultra-Orthodox Jewish schools that teach children it is a doctrinal obligation to abuse anyone in holy orders, I guess that means in Catholic ministerial garb that they encounter in public. Ultra-Orthodox Jews, including children as young as 8, spit at members of the clergy on a daily basis, according to, yes, Father Pizzaballa. Such a culture of intolerance has resulted in a scapegoating of Christians, leading to them becoming the convenient target of extremists, fighting political battles that have nothing to do with the community. Sadly, what happened in Latrun is only another in a long series of attacks against Christians and their places of worship, said Christian leaders this week. And more news of the godly. An abuser from within the Dominican friars played a role in national initiatives of the Catholic Church to improve responses to child abuse. A child abuser from within the Dominican friars. Watch them go overhead right now. Isn't that amazing? The man was alleged to have abused children in the late 1950s and early 1960s. I guess Kennedy's election stopped that then. The accusations were not made until 1990. He stayed in his ministry until 1995, during which time he took part in anti-abuse measures. It's like the firemen setting fires, kind of. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. It is so very much a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
I'm just going to pause for a moment to say that the BBC announced that one of their crack newsreaders, radio newsreaders,
Charlotte Green,
is retiring. And she's famous. In honor of her retirement, they played a number of tapes of her breaking up on the air when she had to read, you know, funny things or hear funny sound bites. I'm betting right now, if she read that story, she wouldn't have... I did better than Charlotte Green would have done. Anyway, the apology of the week. Stevie Wonder caused a stir with his remark that some gay people, specifically the recently outed rising star Frank Ocean, are, quote, confused. The famed singer-songwriter has now apologized, calling himself an advocate for the power of love. He said in an interview with The Guardian, quote, when the subject of Frank Ocean came up, Wonder originally said, quote, I think, honestly, some people who think they're gay, they're confused. People can misconstrue closeness for love. People can feel connected. They bond. I'm not saying all gay people are confused. Some people have a desire to be with the same sex, but that's them. Now he gives a statement to the gay magazine The Advocate. I'm sorry that my words about anyone feeling confused about their love were misunderstood. No one has been a greater advocate for the power of love in this world than I, both in my life and in my music. Clearly, love is love. What I'm not confused about is the world needing much more love. No hate, no prejudice, no bigotry. And more unity, peace, and understanding. Period. Stevie saying what the world needs now is love, because I think he's got a... After a drawn-out trial, Shepard Fairey, on a related subject, has avoided jail time. Related subject because he was accused of play. And was instead sentenced earlier this week to 2 years probation, 300 hours of community service, and a $25,000 fine for covering up his illegal use of an Associated Press photo in his iconic Obama Hope posters. Yes, that's where this story has ended up. The judge cited Ferry's extensive charitable works as well as his difficulties with type 1 diabetes as factors in the decision. You should try that thing where you don't have to prick your finger every day. And for his part, Ferry apologized profusely for violating the court's trust, calling it the worst thing I've ever done in my life. I'm deeply ashamed and remorseful that I didn't live up to my own standards of honesty and integrity, he said. McDonald's Corporation this week apologized for a pair of St. Paul, Minnesota billboards whose Hmong language, H-M-O-N-G, text has been faulted for its mangled translation. While it was our intention to create a special message for our Hmong population in Minnesota, we now realize an error was made in the translation of coffee gets you up, breakfast gets you going. It was not our intention to offend anyone, says a statement from marketing director of McDonald's, and we apologize for the error. We are working with our local advertising agency to correct these billboards. Unfortunately, we do not learn what it actually did say in Hmong. Just said it was garbled. This is the first time McDonald's has ever advertised in Hmong in the United States. There are 64,000 people of that descent in the Twin Cities. They live mainly in Laos, or as John F. Kennedy used to say, Laos. Conservative talk show host Glenn Beck says he was rudely treated on an American Airlines flight and will never fly on the carrier again. American has apologized and said it's looking into the incident. Beck said on his radio show, that a flight attendant on a New York to Dallas plane treated me as a subhuman. He said the man fawned over the other passengers but barked at Beck and slammed a can of soda down in front of him. Beck implied the flight attendant singled him out because of his political views. He wondered whether American even wanted conservatives on its planes. My family will never choose American Airlines again if this is the kind of people American Airlines likes to hire. American tweeted an apology, and a spokesman amplified the tweet. We are sorry for the experience Mr. Beck had in a recent flight. The comfort and satisfaction of our customers are important priorities to us. We've reached out to Mr. Beck's office. Free ticket, babe. That's what I'm hearing. American is headquartered in Dallas, so is Glenn Beck. I just raised that as an oddity, just for your file of oddities, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing more than that. Dateline Brussels, the mayor of Brussels apologized. Do you have one? A file of oddities? You should. Part of your emergency kit. The mayor of Brussels has apologized to the Jewish community for the municipality's Holocaust-era role in deporting Jews, but added that he would, quote, not pass judgment, unquote. Speaking to a crowd of a few hundred people at a ceremony at Brussels City Hall, Mayor Freddie Thielman said, I want to officially extend apologies in the name of the city of Brussels to the Jewish community. He also said, it is not my place to pass judgment, but I, of course, acknowledge the role the municipality and political and administrative authorities in the city of Brussels played in the deportation of Jews. Gets me right here, Mayor. Oscar Pistorius, the double amputee who came to be known as Blade Runner during the 2012 Olympics, you've heard of them, you've heard of him, has apologized for criticizing his opponent after losing to him in the 200-meter final last Sunday. He was bested by Brazilian runner Alan Oliveira during the last 20 meters of the race. He complained afterwards that Oliveira's blades were too long and raised concerns over rules that allow athletes to make themselves, quote, unnaturally tall. I would like some of that, I would never want to detract from another athlete's moment of triumph, and I want to apologize for the timing of my comments, said Pistorius. The International Paralympic Committee said that Oliveira's blades, just like all athletes, were determined by a formula based on height and dynamics laid down in regulations, and he was not in violation. Fresh concerns emerged over how church dioceses share information after a report revealed that three priests who retired to Ireland had child abuse convictions. The Irish National Board for Safeguarding Children, the NBSC, the NIBS, published its review of child protection practices in the diocese, focusing particular attention on priests who retired to the diocese from overseas or who spent considerable time in Ireland in their retirement. Three of those were found to have child abuse convictions from overseas. None are the focus of any abuse complaints in the Diocese of Cork and Ross. But the NBSC said it was crucial that proper information be shared between dioceses. The Bishop of Cork said, Dr. John Buckley said, the clear message here is we never accept a priest for our diocese from either a religious congregation or a diocese abroad without a statement saying this priest is in good standing. He once again apologized to all abuse victims. Crime novel author R.J. Ellery admitted to writing positive Amazon reviews about his books. Fellow crime writer Jeremy Duns revealed the self-reviews, according to Gawker website, which prompted Ellery's apology, calling the self-reviews my responsibility alone. I wholeheartedly regret the lapse of judgment that allowed personal opinions to be disseminated in this way, and I would like to apologize to my readers and the writing community. Should we speculate that his apology was ghostwritten? No. That would be fun. Gawker added that the Crime Writers Association weighed in on the self-reviews, which it called misleading and unfair. This was reminiscent. Ellery offered to resign from the Crime Writers Association. But the Guardian newspaper reminded readers of the case of Orlando Feig's online reviews. The formerly distinguished historian admitted to posting negative reviews about his competitors' books and positive reviews of his own books. This is going on a lot. Almost as if the internet ain't the fount of truth. An Indian gadget blogger says Samsung apologized for leaving him stranded in Berlin after he declined to serve as a brand ambassador for the electronics giant. Clinton Jeff of Unleash the Phones thought Samsung had invited him to a big German trade show with the Mobilers program offering to pay for his plane tickets and a hotel room so he could cover the event as an independent journalist. Yeah, that would happen because Samsung paid for you to go there. You'd be an independent. He told a tech news website that the invitation had offered him the choice of coming as a reporter or a promoter and said he would make it clear he would only accept the free trip as a reporter. Samsung's organizers thought he'd signed on to participate in promotional activities after he arrived. Samsung was asking him to man a booth and show off devices to members of the press. He refused, and Samsung reps told him they were canceling his return plane ticket and hotel stay. After the story broke, Samsung sent him an apology for putting him through, quote, undue hardship. A French blogger, France Kicker, wrote about a similar trip to cover the Olympics where she says she was forced to participate in marketing stunts. She didn't name her host. The Guardian newspaper says it was Samsung. Hey, they got money troubles. They got to pay Apple $1 billion. An eyewear website operator who threatened some of his customers with murder or rape when they complained about their eyeglasses was sentenced to 4 years in prison by a judge this week who said he terrorized them. Vitaly Borker, yes, an actual Borker, shook his head and wiped his hand across his eyes as the judge announced the sentence this week, along with $100,000 in fines and restitution. I thought that was illegal. And Borker, owner of DecorMyEyes.com, deliberately harassed and abused customers in order to generate reams of negative online reviews and comments, which in turn had the effect of pushing up the site's page ranking on Google. He bragged about it in a New York Times article in 2010, and I bet it was longer than a paragraph, too. The judge noted that several people who testified at a July hearing said they called police or installed security systems because of threats Borker made after they complained about their glasses. You were terrifying people, putting them in fear of their lives, of being viciously raped, the judge said. Borker said he was genuinely and deeply sorry for the awful threats that I made. He said, I never intended to carry on the threats. I had a big mouth I couldn't control, and it ruined my life. At the hearing, a Chicago resident testified Borker harassed her for a month and a half after she tried to take advantage of his money-back guarantee. She said he left her a voicemail message saying, quote, I hope you die. I want to slice your legs off. I'm just leaving that space for you to make a connection. If you want to, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not gonna. Dateline Strasbourg, France. A steam leak at France's oldest nuclear plant triggered a fire alert on Wednesday, but the government and the company said that the company that operates the plant said the incident, in which two workers were slightly hurt, posed, say it with me, no risk. No fire broke out. Why is this in the apologies? Addie?
I didn't do it.
I'll leave that for the next segment of the show. The head of Chile's army has apologized for one of his senior generals instructing army recruiters to avoid recruiting lesbian, gay, and bisexual and transgendered people, and for suggesting they were unfit to serve. I offer my sincere apology to any person who may have felt affected by the unfortunate expressions, said General Juan Miguel Fuente Ayas. Bill Maher has apologized to Christine O'Donnell. Do you remember either of them? Just kidding. The one-time Tea Party favorite appeared this week as a guest on Real Time. Maher apologized for dredging up the old politically incorrect video of O'Donnell saying she dabbled in witchcraft, which caused her no end of trouble in 2010. I'm sorry about that. I knew when I brought out the witch tape I made your life hell. I'm sorry about that, Maher said. Aw, thank you, O'Donnell said. Maher added, I gotta say I don't agree with your ideas, but it shouldn't have hung on that stupid witch thing. O'Donnell admitted the matter was partially a self-inflicted wound, since she chose to add fuel to the fire by making a response and stating that she was not, in fact, a witch. Maher didn't ask her whether she had continued to dabble in witchcraft recently. What's he supposed to be, a newsman? The euphoria at Nokia as it unveiled two new phones with lots of exciting technology evaporated quickly this week when the company said that the images in an ad for one of the phones were faked. Images were faked. The whole thing started when Nokia announced the Lumia 920, its new phone with a camera technology called PureView. The technology is supposed to let users shoot better pictures at night than they could with rival phones and record stabilized video. They showcased both features in an ad showing a man and woman riding around on bikes, the man supposedly capturing the woman on video using the Lumia 920. But what the phone company didn't say was that the portions of ad that looked like they were shot with the 920 weren't. The way this was discovered was a website realized the ad had a little something extra in the background at around the 27-second mark. You see the woman in the ad pass by a trailer with a window, and in that window you can see the reflection for what appears to be a van with a camera that is definitely not the Lumia 920. The company quickly confirmed that is true and put out an apology. We should have posted a disclaimer saying this was a representation. Only, this was not shot with a new Lumia 920, at least not yet. We apologize for the confusion we created. Unquote. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And it is a copyrighted feature. I'll repeat it, of this broadcast. I've been in this town so long that back in the city I've been taken for a loss to come, and I've known for a long, long time. Fell in love years ago with an innocent girl from the Spanish and Indian home, home of the heroes and villains. Once at night, Cotillion Square, they fired, and she was right in the rain of the bullets that eventually brought her down. But she's still dancing in the night, unafraid of what it do in a town full of heroes and we'll be right back.
Children were raised, you know, they suddenly rise. They started slow long ago, head to toe, healthy, wealthy, and wise. I've been in this town so long, so long to the city. I'm fit with the stuff to ride in the rough, and sunny down snuff, I'm all right by the heroes and
from London, this is Le Show. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you saw what came out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics on Friday. The headlines said only 96,000 jobs created last month, which was not, according to economists, nearly enough to keep up with population growth. But the unemployment rate dropped to 8.1%, not where you'd want it. But that made the headlines, that the unemployment rate dropped. And I think some of the Democratic candidates were even bragging about that for a while. It turns out that the reason that the unemployment rate dropped, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, was because a lot of people just stopped looking for work. And the unemployment rate is based on the number of people who are actively seeking employment. So if you just say, screw it, you've reduced the unemployment rate. So there's the solution, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just convince all the out-of-work people to stop looking for work, and the unemployment rate goes to zero. And things look great, don't they? I'm better off than I was 4 weeks ago because I don't have to pretend to care about the Olympics anymore. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of Afghanistan could be carved into 8 separate kingdoms. Tell me where you've heard this before. With some of them potentially ruled by the Taliban, according to a controversial plan under discussion in London and Washington, according to the British newspaper The Independent, codenamed Plan C. You're assuming there was a Plan B, sir. The radical blueprint for the future of Afghanistan sets out reforms that would relegate President Karzai to a figurehead role. Devised by the conservative MP, Member of Parliament, Foreign Office aide Tobias Elwood, it warns that the country faces a bleak future when it is left to fend for itself. He claims that a regionalized state under a powerful new prime minister would tackle the weak government, tribal disputes and corruption, which many fear could plunge Afghanistan into chaos when NATO troops leave. Yes, very much like Joe Biden's plan for Iraq, where they've just sentenced the vice president to death. Things look good there. Anyway, back to AFPAC. As NATO prepares to withdraw, the main road between the country's two largest cities, Kabul and Kandahar, has become instead a symbol of what's gone wrong, reports the Telegraph newspaper. Rather than providing a secure transport link, it has become a highway of death. Opened to great fanfare in 2003, was hailed as a key element in rebuilding the economic infrastructure. But today, its once pristine asphalt has become as scarred as the country's hopes, a bomb-cratered 300-mile-long shooting gallery littered with the wrecks of vehicles attacked by Taliban insurgents. Makes you proud. Afghanistan is becoming quickly, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, the face of a new and insidious form of deadly violence. The insider attack, known in NATO parlance as green on blue. Green represents friendly national forces. Blue represents international forces. The attacks have increased dramatically this year. So far, 48 NATO troops have died in 31 separate attacks. Last month, during Ramadan, 11 U.S. soldiers were killed in 9 days. This is 14% of all combat fatalities this year. This is significantly higher than last year. These numbers are so high, some analysts claim they may represent the highest incidence of intentional friendly fire attacks in recorded military history. We're number one. The Afghan Education Ministry has endorsed a new history curriculum for school students that deletes nearly 4 decades of the country's war-torn past. The government says textbooks based on the new curriculum will help bring unity in a country traditionally polarized along ethnic and political lines, according to the BBC. But critics accuse ministers of trying to appease the Taliban and other powerful groups by erasing history that portrays them in a bad light. The past 40 years in Afghanistan, pretty turbulent. There's no mention of the bloody coups of the 1970s, the 1979 Soviet invasion, the Moscow-backed communist regimes, and countless human rights excesses committed by secret police. No mention of any of that, nor of the bloody civil war between Mujahideen factions that tore Kabul apart in the 1990s, which gave rise to the Taliban.
How did we get here?
I don't know. And U.S. forces in Afghanistan say they have suspended training new recruits to the Afghan local police amid a spike in the number of green and blue attacks, which are damaging trust between Afghans and their allies. The Afghan local police is a militia set up 2 years ago in villages where the national police is weak. It has been beset by allegations of abuse and corruption. Rogue shootings have killed 45 NATO-led troops so far this year. Despite the coalition taking steps to try to prevent the attacks, such as requiring foreign soldiers to carry loaded weapons at all times. U.S. forces will temporarily suspend training of about 1,000 new recruits while they re-vet members in the 16,000-strong force. It all sounds like there should be some phone calls coming in very, very soon, right here. From Afghanistan Public Radio, where every dollar you pledge is matched by the Taliban.
From the newly revetted presidential palace in downtown Kabul, known worldwide as the City of Checkpoints, I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid.
We're Split and Splat, the Tapped Out Brothers. Welcome to another edition of Cars I Talk. Today's program comes to you with the assistance of cholera, the disease with more comebacks than Cher.
No, you've done a wonderful job of cleaning the city's water supply, my brother.
Oh, how would you know? You haven't drunk anything but champagne since the mid-90s.
Hey, homie, that's just how I roll. Cristal is always in the house.
You really are a rapper at heart.
Hence the heavy personal security detail. Hey, just because a deal goes sour doesn't mean the dealer has to be bitter.
No, that's good advice, even for non-rappers. But where does your security detail get trained? Because the Americans have stopped training mine.
Oh, my dear brother, I could tell you, but...
I know, but then you'd have to kill me.
No, of course not. That's why I have the security detail.
Hello, you're on Cars I Talk.
Hello, I'm Samir, long-time child, first-time caller.
Finally, we moved the demographic needle downward. You know, this is so hard with this format. The kids like music and pornography, not talk.
Will you let him go ahead, Samir?
Thank you. Well, my question is about the history textbook in my school.
This is something my brother is an expert on. That and money laundering.
Seriously, Samir, we're introducing a new textbook that takes a more holistic view of Afghan history. Less focus on fighting and disagreement, more focus on success and progress.
Yes, almost as if the book had been written by the people at Disney.
What do you mean, as if?
Now, does that help you, young fella?
Well, not really. Mm. My school is too poor for new textbooks, mm-hmm. But when I got my history book about half the pages had been torn out. My teacher said I could get them from Kabul if I pledged enough money to your program.
You know, I don't get angry very often.
That's because he knows the combination to the safe where my champagne is kept.
But this really does upset me. Mm. Young man, mm-hmm. This is a slander. This is a calumny. Have you learned those words yet?
In Pashto.
Close enough. This is the kind of politically motivated charge that will make it harder to bring our country together after the Americans take their weapons and their troops out and leave only drones and spies behind. Samir, this is your president talking.
Yes, sir.
I mean this.
Yes, sir.
That offer was only good during the pledge drive. Do you understand? We said at the time, once it's gone, it's gone.
Yes, sir.
So, what I would like you to do is you learn what's on those other pages, and maybe one day we'll see you doing my job.
That's right. His history textbook had no pages in it.
Thanks for the call.
You know, he could still get the tote bag.
He's confused enough. Hello, you are on Karzai Talk.
Hello, I'm Mohammed.
That should narrow it down.
Member of the police, first-time caller.
Do you ever notice we never have a repeat caller?
Mm-hmm. I ascribe it to our vengeful screeners.
They are rough. Yes, Mohammed, we thank you for your service.
Well, I'd say you're welcome, but I haven't been able to do any service. Mm-hmm. My training has been suspended. I am spending my days sitting at home waiting for the Katie Couric show to come on.
That's outrageous.
I agree.
That woman is getting $45 million a year to do that show.
Mohammed, nobody feels worse about that than I do, with the possible exception of Dr. Phil.
Well, I am no Taliban. Mm-hmm. I am no Haqqani. Mm-hmm. My own sister died stepping on an IUD.
Well, I'm so sorry to hear that. I think you meant to say an IED.
No, she was using old-fashioned birth control, and she was incredibly clumsy.
Mm.
Well, I know it must be very frustrating for you to have been issued a weapon and a uniform and not to know how to use them.
Oh, I know how to use the weapon.
Well, so at least you can vent your frustration a little bit.
Yeah, easier than shooting off your uniform.
But believe me, our American friends are working to get the vetting, as they call it, completed as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have non-refundable flights out of here in 18 months.
Well, my problem is that I've gotten caught up in the vetting process.
Oh, really?
Yes, they flagged me as a troublemaker.
And this was because?
Because I wrote hate mail to Katie. Mm-hmm. She gets on my nerves.
Wow, but you said you're waiting for her show to come on.
Yes. I shoot my weapon at the screen.
Well, you may be bad for the police force, but you're good for the economy. I can get you a good deal on your next TV.
Will you stop? Thank you for the call.
A customer is a customer.
We had help today from the Afghan Father's Day Foundation. We are not your father's Father's Day Foundation.
Legal services for Karzai Talk from the law firm of Ketchum & Newcombe. I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. Join us again for another edition of Karzai Talk. This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
Summer is a sizzler. Sweat pouring down your face. Your armpits are a fountain. Your shirt's a wet disgrace. And it's hard to sleep at nighttime. Can't walk the streets by day. 4 months in the hot box. Just one thing I can say. You may see. Won't hear me moan, 'cause heat is only skin deep. Cold is to the bone. Cold is
winter's clean and brittle. Humidity's all gone. You can ski and you can snowboard. Weather's got it going on. But to keep blood circulating, you wear 50 pounds of stuff. Forget your gloves or layers. You're a dead man soon enough. If I can see my breath before me, got to be a rolling stone. This heat is only skin deep, but cold is to the bone. Cold is to the bone. Sunscreen's not a bother, and I love those longer days. Clean air makes me shiver. Give me some muggy haze. Oh, winter lasts forever. Summer's over in a flash. I hear TV talk of freezing. I got to make a dash. Snowbirds all around me, so I know I'm not alone. The heat is only skin deep. Cold is to the bone. To the bone. Cold is to the bone. Cold is to the bone.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend, the Atom.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap. Save, too safe to meter.
So this week you need me, huh?
That's right, I do. Don't be bitter.
Bitter, just radioactive.
The question of how to dispose of nuclear-powered equipment and irradiated waste has been a nagging companion for the world's advanced navies for decades. In the case of the former Soviet Union, one of its solutions was to sink the stuff in the Arctic. Information now provided to the Norwegian daily Aftenposten by Russia's authorities catalog enormous quantities of Soviet-era nuclear reactors and radioactive waste dumped into the Kara Sea over the course of decades, far worse than previously known, and which include the experimental K-27 submarine that was eventually scuttled in 1981 once repairs to its liquid metal nuclear power plant were deemed impossible to complete.
It's a nice sea.
That scuttling operation was allegedly performed at a far shallower depth than the International Atomic Energy Authority's guidelines of 3,000 meters. And although its two experimental reactors were sealed to avoid radioactive pollution, there are now questions as to how, as to the real danger of contamination. There is information that the K-27's reactors could critical status released during a seminar with Russia's nuclear regulatory body in February of this year.
Could? Couldn't? Who knows?
Norway's Minister of the Environment, Bard Vigar Solhjell, immediately played down any dangers revealed by the report. Although a Norway-based environmental non-governmental organization believes the gradual publication of information by Russia is intended as a quiet call for help in dealing with a huge issue. The existence of the officials confirmed to Aftenposten the existence of some 17,000 containers of radioactive waste, 14 nuclear reactors, and 735 pieces of radioactively contaminated heavy machinery.
I didn't like Norwegian salmon anyway. It's too heavy for atoms.
Okay. Dateline Tokyo, the head of the Japanese utility that owns the Fuke nuclear plant, says last year's meltdown sapped away money it might have used to switch to alternative energy, making it all the more important for the company to stick with nuclear. Naomi Hirose, president of TEPCO, said it is quite troubling that the government responding to public opinion is moving toward eliminating nuclear power. He said TEPCO would follow whatever energy policy Japan adopts. TEPCO is saddled with huge compensation and cleanup costs after the crisis. It was nationalized in July after receiving a $12.8 billion public bailout. It had attempted some diversification of its energy mix before the tsunami. They built 3 mega solar power plants and more than a dozen windmills with its affiliate Eurus Energy Holdings. But the company's difficult financial picture means it doesn't have the money to invest in renewable energy. Ain't that ironic? Isn't that nutty? The environmental ministry in Japan says it has selected a forest in Yaita, Tochigi province, as a candidate site for final disposal of waste contaminated by radioactive substances from the Fuke accident. It's a natural forest, ladies and gentlemen. That's where they'll dump it, because they don't have an Arctic. Early steps into invest. I think we... Oh, no. This is following up at Hanford, that double shell tank. It's a double shell game.
Not funny.
The early steps in the investigation into whether one of the double-shell tanks may have a leak from its inner shell have turned up troubling results. More unknown material has been found in a third place between the two shells, according to the Department of Energy. A photo taken of the same spot in 2006 shows the area was clean then. And from the Mainichi Daily News, nuclear disaster minister Goshi Hosono gave verbal warnings to the head of the Cabinet Office's Japan Atomic Energy Commission for holding secret pro-nuclear meetings. A total of 23 pro-nuclear meetings that took place between November last year and April this year under the guise of study sessions were, quote, inappropriate from the standpoint of neutrality, transparency, and fairness, according to Osama.
But the coffee was hot.
I bet. And a nuclear cargo boat was expected to arrive in Scrabster, Scotland, soon enough, on a mission to transport a consignment of nuclear waste from Dunray to the continent. Special security measures will accompany the loading of the radioactive cargo aboard the Atlantic Osprey. It's 153 tons of intermediate-level waste being sent to a reactor in northeast Belgium over a 4-year period. Armed police presence en passage. So we'll watch for that.
Should be fun.
Clean, cheap, too safe to meter. Our friend.
Just an acquaintance.
The Atom. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ 7.490 megahertz. Count every one of those megahertz. It's shortwave. Won't take you long. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com for your smartphone through stitcher.com and as a free podcast via kcrw.com. And it'd be just like the Olympic spirit lasting for 4 years if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All right, thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Adrian Bodnam, Bodders, here at Global Radio in London. He's got the Olympic spirit. His blades aren't too long. He helped to make today's show not only a possibility, but a veritable reality. And this broadcast is on Twitter. Join the almost 70,000 followers at The Harry Shearer.
I think Harry might have gone over the line here.
No, I'm right on the line, babe. Don't worry about it. By the way, you may have recognized Charlie Wood's voice on the last piece of music we played that had a vocal in it. And that's Danny Thompson playing bass. That's from, and it's a song of mine, and it's on Danny's new record called Connected. And it's also on my new record. Buy them both and compare.
We do not have time for this kind of silliness. We got better stuff to do. I've got better stuff to do.
We are out of time. Thank you for reminding me, sir. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the Rubber Promise and the home of the homeless. So long from London town. Mm-hmm.